The Irish Times, election 2011.
Well, counting has begun, but even at this very early stage, I think we can safely say that the next Taoiseach of our country, the next leader, will be Enda Kenny. And there's a terrific piece in today's Irish Times by Cathy Sheridan, profiling the man in question. Cathy joins me on the line. Hi, Cathy.
Good morning, Hugh.
Let me just put the question straightforwardly to you. We've seen him on the television. People have expressed strong opinions about him, some of them negative, some of them more positive. But who is this man who spent an awful long time in the nether regions of Irish politics before coming to the fore?
He almost crept up on us in a way that his wife, Fionnuala, says he crept up on her. You know, he chased her all around Dáil Éireann when they met. He was 30, she was 25. She was working for Charlie Haughey at the time. It was a kind of a Montague-Capulet relationship, really. They didn't want anybody else to know about it. But he chased her in and out of that lair in Fianna Fáil until he finally got her. And then it took him 10 years to make her Mrs. Kenny. And it occurs to me that it actually has been almost analogous to the way he's built himself up in the public eye. I mean, even this morning, as we know he's going to be Taoiseach, I'm almost surprised by it. But by no means is he an overnight success, as we know, because he was 24 when he was elected to the Dáil after the death of his father Henry, and his father Henry was parliamentary secretary back then. Which is the equivalent today of a minister of state. Henry was a legend in Mayo in that he'd won an All Ireland medal for Mayo, I think, in 1936. And as somebody said to me down there this week, they're a great rarity in Mayo. So Henry was a legend, lived on the farm, had been a teacher. His wife was a teacher. All the Kenny children became teachers, apart from John, who is now retired from the Bank of Ireland. So when Enda went for the Dáil, he was a chosen one, although he wasn't the obvious one, but he was a chosen one in the end, because he wasn't the eldest. He wasn't Henry. There was a Henry Jr., who a lot of people thought would be the choice. But I'm told they're a very reserved family, and it didn't come naturally to Henry to put himself forward, even though they'd all been classic children of rural TDs, I suppose, in the sense that they had delivered the speeches outside the churches on Sunday mornings and that sort of thing. It didn't come naturally to them, Hugh, really, to put themselves forward in that way. And Enda became the choice on that basis. So in a sense, it was almost serendipity, really, that Enda, who was then teaching in a rural national school in Mayo, shooting rats from out under the classroom floors, as he put it himself, to contesting a by-election for Fine Gael in what was actually a heavily Fianna Fáil constituency.
Do you think he was a reluctant TD at that point then? As you say, he was very young. I get the impression you're saying the family were quite shy, which might account for some of his difficulties with public persona and public speaking later in life. Did he come reluctantly to the job?
I think that's a very good point. I don't think he was reluctant. I think it was just taken for granted. I mean, I gather that Liam Cosgrove would have been down there in person, or at the very least on the phone to them in person, imploring a Kenny to come forward for the by-election because it wasn't winnable otherwise. So there would have been tremendous pressure on the family then to have put forward a candidate. And I'm not terribly sure if Enda was all that reluctant, but certainly it would have been quite a change for a fellow who was very sporty, didn't take a drink at the time, was very happy teaching in this rural national school, actually had a very solitary side to him as well, apart from being a bit of a very gregarious, you know, loving a drink sort of in the pubs around the town, loved his morning golf games on a Sunday, but also had a very solitary side to him in that he loved to go off for a day shooting or climbing mountains, and quite often he did that on his own. So that would have been a side of Enda that I suppose must have conflicted with the thought of going to Leinster House at the age of 24.
Indeed, and the lonely and rather strange existence of a backbench TD from a rural constituency, spending nights alone up in Dublin. Maybe it's not that lonely going out drinking maybe of a night as well. But, you know, a rather strange existence for a young man, probably dealing a lot of the time with people of an older generation as well.
And that point was made to me during the week by a very close friend of Kenny's, actually, Hugh, who also had entered politics in his mid-20s. And he said that something is inevitably lost along the way. He said you kind of lose your youth to a certain degree. you were going full-time to meetings of some kind at night and at weekends, and it was all an older generation you were mixing with. So you were drinking in the way the older generation drank, you were talking in the way they drank. And this man said he didn't finally meet up again with the people, with his contemporaries until he was in his 40s and 50s. So I think that it's almost a side issue, but it kind of explains why a lot of young politicians become old fogies, I think. They age early, in my view.
Yeah, and trying to think back to those days, you know, that when in his early days, not just his early years, but let's say his first 10 or 15 years as a backbench TD through the 1970s and the 1980s, which were tumultuous times for Fine Gael, huge changes in the party, the change from Liam Cosgrave as leader to Garrett Fitzgerald as leader, the difficult times of the 1980s, the Talla strategy, Alan Jukes getting deposed. Where did he stand within the party or on any of these things?
It seems to me that he didn't take it all terribly seriously for a long time. He was definitely a bit of a gadabout and was used as a sort of a poster boy for Fine Gael. He was a good-looking fellow, very articulate, enjoyed public speaking, you know, in those particular... As we know, he was always a very good public speaker to his own audience, I suppose. In a way, I suppose you might say the Dublin media didn't take to. But certainly he was always very well received at the gatherings he spoke to. And he would have been a big gadabout around the country, a big draw at Fine Gael meetings around the country. He enjoyed that life. He began to take a drink, I think, when he was 28. He would have been 4 years in the Dáil at that stage. So I'd say, which would have been a huge temptation, I think, for anybody anyway, spending several nights a week in Dublin. So I'd say he enjoyed himself. I mean, Phil Hogan says, you know, his big enforcer says, from my knowledge of him growing up in politics, he wouldn't have taken politics as seriously as he would in later years. But nevertheless, Phil points out, in every election Fine Gael was involved with, he was a minister of some kind, now a junior minister. So as he says, all the leaders saw something there that was positive. But that implies that Enda really wasn't all that serious and wouldn't have been central to the big events, I suppose, within Fine Gael during those years.
And then I suppose something happened, and what happened was the disastrous election result for Fine Gael of 2002, when many of their most significant figures were swept away, when a lot of pundits were predicting that Fine Gael was a dying party and would never return to power again. And at that point, Enda became leader and became serious about politics.
He did. In fact, what we tend to forget is that he nearly lost his seat a couple of times, which I suppose is evidence, first of all, of local storms within Mayo, such as the Rod licence. And there were several controversies there. I mean, the Corrib gas one is going on at the moment, but there have been a few in Mayo that were real little rockets in terms of local movements. So he nearly lost his seat, I think, in the 80s and also in 2001 or 2002. But he'd also contested the leadership in 2001, and as we know, Michael Noonan won through. And if anybody talks about Enda Kenny, one of the things they usually mention is luck. And Enda was lucky in losing that leadership battle, as we know, because it destroyed Michael Noonan, at least for a while. In 2002, by the time Enda got a second bite of the leadership, as we know, a lot of the more credible challengers would have been booted out by the electorate at that stage. So he sort of had the field to himself in many ways. But he nonetheless, I think what's interesting about Enda Kenny is there was something about him in 2002 that people in the parliamentary party saw as leadership qualities, which is something I think that we have taken a long time to catch up with.
And looking at him now as a future Taoiseach, what are those leadership qualities? What qualities will he bring to the role of Taoiseach?
They would say it's a combination of things, that we're all looking for this one thing that and that has eluded us all along. We look at him being slightly gauche, I suppose, and shy in public speaking. We look at the sort of awkward hand movements. We look at him sort of, you know, making lame jokes maybe. But they would say that's not what he projects when he's out and talking to people. That first and foremost, he has this tremendous one-to-one likability. And one person told me that back in 2002, when they were looking at his qualities, they thought he would actually be a serious contender to Bertie Ahern in that particular dimension. That, you know, where Bertie close up had this way of looking at you, where you thought you were the only person in the world. And they believe that Enda had this too. He also has such qualities, which again mightn't be terribly obvious to those of us on the outside. Huge, ferocious determination, as somebody put it, which was evident on the football field, for example. One fellow said he'd fight to the bitter end, he would never lie down, and he'd ring people and listen to them, but once he's come to a decision, God Almighty wouldn't shift him. He had tremendous power to inspire and motivate, I'm told. One fellow said he played football with him years ago, and the speeches he gave at halftime were utterly inspirational. He wouldn't send you out through the door, he'd send you out through the wall. And he has a phenomenal memory for names, and we all know politicians for whom that is a tremendous gift, and that can't be underestimated. And this man said he'd remember the names of the kids down the town, which I must say I can't remember the names of my own children, but Enda can do that. And he said if you were looking at the first debate, for example, in this series of this campaign, he said you'd have seen he was the best of the five at mentioning the names of people in the audience who asked questions. And again, that's underestimated. If somebody looks at you and remembers your name, you remember that person too. His stamina, Hugh, is also legendary, apparently, within Fine Gael. This guy keeps using the word ferocious about it. It's relentless. In Dublin, for example, he still might be having a late pint of the Ginger Man, which is his favourite, his big drinking place in Dublin. His apartment's around the corner in Fenian Street. But he'd have the late pint, but he'd still be out the following morning at 7, looking as fresh as a daisy, boyish, handing out the leaflets or taking meetings. And there would be no hoarseness in the voice of any of that. And he says himself he'd go for 18 to 20 hours a day. I mean, his wife Fionnuala has described him as being the Duracell bunny with the extra, extra long life batteries.
Cathy, do you think the Dublin media is snobbish about Enda Kenny? You know, the cringe factor, which I've seen again and again reflected both on the web and in the way journalists write about him, about the gaucheness you describe, the hand movements, the kind of the discomfort with engaging in an articulate way with arguments. Do you think that's an urban-rural divide, a kind of a snobbery, or is there more to it than that?
It's an interesting question. I put that to a few people in Mayo, and you'd expect them to say, oh yeah, that's always been the way. But in fact, one of them very thoughtfully said to me, look, he said, one of the phenomenal things about being from Mayo is, and I'm sure you've noticed it too, that practically every fifth person you talk to is from Mayo, no matter where you go in the world. The same crucially applies in Dublin. This man was saying that if you're canvassing in Dublin, nearly every fifth house you come to, there's a Mayo exile there. So what he would say is that that's far too simplistic to say it's an urban-rural thing. If you push them, they will say there was an awkwardness there. And one man said to me that there was a huge dent in his confidence from time to time, naturally, which came from the constant drubbing by the media. And the way he'd deal with that would be to go off with cycling with his children on a Sunday morning. He'd cycle 50 kilometres. He's genuinely a very sporty, athletic person. That's not cosmetic. That's not an image-making thing. He'd go off with his children. He'd take 4 or 5 weeks off during the summer. This is how he'd recover from that. But I think there is an acceptance that there was a presentational problem. And this time, as we know, Mark Mortel, for example, is one of the party's image makers. And latterly, Gavin Duffy was brought in to help him prepare for the debates and policy launches. And there's no doubt about it, they made a difference. But as one person said to me, one of his critics actually, said, but no amount of polishing is going to transform a car that has a dodgy engine underneath. And what this man would argue is that Enda has come on with the party. He's become more of a leader. He's become a more effective leader. He has brought the party along, I suppose, but they've also brought the party along too. He's a very strong front bench. I don't think anybody questions that. So there's been an assembly of different things that have come to fruition, I think, in recent times. There's greater depth and more confidence in their policies. They've been banging away about them for long enough, so that's probably why at that level. But Enda certainly, I think, maybe learned lessons from the heave last year and has become more effective as a leader. He's less inclined to go a little bit along the road with everybody. That became very evident in this election. He was more decisive in the way he said things. There was less of the awkwardness. I think he definitely looked like a man who'd gained confidence, but as somebody said, that comes with success. You know, if success is a thousand fathers, failure is an orphan. And I think as that was happening, the media became more on side. And he gathered confidence from that. For all they say they don't care about the media, of course they do. It does make a difference to how they're feeling about themselves and how they project themselves to the world.
Today is his day, I think. We can safely say, even at this point, Enda Kenny is certainly going to be the next Taoiseach. Cathy, thank you very much for that.